And welcome, everybody, to Overtime here on YouTube. I am in YouTube land, I hope. Kyle, I think you made it as well.
Yeah, I'm over here.
And Rob, are we actually on YouTube? And did you and Gila make it okay?
We are indeed on YouTube and sounding good. And Gila and
I are here. Yes.
And Alex, where the hell is Alex? Alex?
Alex, I can see Alex's chair.
But that's not enough. That's not enough. We need what sits in Alex's chair as well.
Well, if anyone wants to say anything about Alex that we don't want him to hear, now's the time.
Now's the time.
Yeah. There he is. Okay. Glad you could join us, Alex.
I heard that, Rob. Yep.
I think he went out to the lobby for some refreshments.
No, you have a refreshment in your hands.
I do. I've got a beer in my hand. You got to get yourself set up for overtime.
Well, unfortunately, it's not legal to drink on YouTube for if you're running the YouTube channel.
And all those impressionable minds. Yeah, but on
you could
social
at
media.
Least open the can in front of the microphone.
You want me to do that?
That'd be refreshing. Oh, yeah.
Look at that.
There's no better sound than the... What am I talking about? There's so many better sounds, but it's good. It's good.
That's true. I agree. Yeah. Well, good to be here.
Drinking beer out of a can. Okay. Yeah, we are here, and I want you to hear this. Didn't hear any
hum. That's an A, right? Is a dial tone an A?
I don't know about that. Who has their microphone up or their speaker? Alex, you again. You're not wearing headphones. You have to wear headphones. Is
it? What do you mean? You're hearing an echo?
Yes.
You didn't hear an echo before.
Well,
really?
I'm hearing an echo. Did you hear an echo, Kyle?
Well, I don't know. We were doing a couple things. The phone may have our audio going
no,
back.
No, I had it down.
Okay. Alex, it's not related.
You're missing the point. Alex does not have headphones on. Whenever he doesn't have headphones on, we get echo. So I tie the two together.
Well, I wouldn't say it's echo. I definitely heard us looping back.
Yeah, okay, so looping back. Fine. I hear my voice 2 seconds later. So it's frustrating as hell.
Well, he'll be quick on the draw.
I didn't have headphones on for the entire show, the live radio show.
Well, you did something different. You're doing something. I don't understand it. It's not my head.
He's bargaining.
Is it still?
It's not doing
are
it
you
now.
Still hearing
it's not doing. Do you want me to just say when it happens next time?
Yeah. Well, I think it had something to do with the dial tone. I think it was.
You think so? Okay.
Well, that's why I was suggesting we are going to send it.
Bring the dial tone
it's
back.
It's for the caller's benefit.
Bring the dial tone back.
Okay, but talk over it and hear.
I want to hear. Yeah, I'm talking now. I don't hear anything. Now I'm turning it down, and I'm talking.
Yeah.
Do you hear anything?
How about Alex? Because that's a separate.
Yeah.
The different channel. I'm going to just keep talking.
Turn it up and have Alex talk.
You know what? This is ridiculous.
Yeah, let's wait till we're actually trying to talk to someone.
I can't swear that people outside of me are hearing the feedback or whatever, but I'm hearing it.
I thought I heard something momentarily, but I hung up at the same time as you were talking to Alex.
Yes,
okay, well, maybe we can be of assistance because we heard the echo, I think, when you noticed it. It was your voice echoing back through Alex's connection because Signal puts a little border on and lights up whichever person is it's getting sound from.
Oh. Huh.
So, yeah, I think the reason it happens sometimes and not others is just because whatever echo cancellation thing is going on all of our individual computers... the algorithms are kind of unpredictable and random, and sometimes they drop out or, you know, work less good for a moment. And wearing headphones, we're not subjected to that because the sound from you guys is not ambient in our room here. But
I do apologize because after the dial tone started, I did get distracted. So I was not paying attention to the echo because I was singing inside my head.
I need to do
so.
That.
I was singing Never There by Cake, which, as we all know, begins with a dial tone.
Well, I'm glad everyone is beside themselves that the dial tone is back in a temporary fashion. This isn't permanent, and I can't promise it'll work. But what will work is 802-321-4225.
Yes.
You could also use avail yourself of the toll-free number. It's 833-755-2600.
And as we have been mentioning, Kyle has been hard at work fixing the hum that has plagued us for the past 2 weeks.
Don't build up their expectations.
It's gone. You're too generous, Kyle. We just proved it's not there anymore.
I know.
I mean, I could bring it up.
It's better.
And, doing this last 2 weeks, you'd hear a hum.
The benefit of this configuration is I can slam the phone down.
We have a new phone, too.
Yeah, you want to...
Well, we can tell people. It's not a security violation to tell people what caused the problem. You can also pick up the phone, can't you?
Yeah, one of the hybrids broke. I'll finish the story later.
Hybrid broke. Okay. Wow, you have to physically pick up the receiver. Okay,
it's not connected.
I have a receiver with no wire. That's kind
of
cool.
Well, the headset wire is part of the other hybrid. Anyway, caller, hi.
Yes, good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
How's your night?
Yes, hi. I have a two-part question. Will there be any talks at the Hope Conference about the OmniCard? And the second question is, have any of you guys used the OmniCard, and do you have any either horror stories or good stories about it?
We have used the OmniCard. Kyle and I have used the OmniCard many times, our own OmniCards. I imagine everybody here who's a New Yorker has also used it. I'm very impressed with it, to be honest. The one thing I don't like about the OmniCard, and I like just about everything about it, including the fact that you can't go, more than 12 or 13 rides in a week before it's all free, because there's a maximum amount you can pay. But what I don't like is not knowing if you got a free transfer or not. It just says go on a bus or go on a train after you've already ridden on something else. So you're not entirely sure if you're getting credit if it's a transfer or if it's a new fare. That is my only note.
Okay. I know many years ago there was a talk at the Hope Conference called Hacking the Metro Card, and I'm wondering if anybody's going to do something called Hacking the OmniCard.
Yeah, I don't know if we've gotten a talk for that yet. I'm not up on all of them, but it's definitely one we would welcome. Let's put it that way. And on the subject of talks, we are it's still open. You can still submit your talk and panel ideas for the Hope Conference, which is August 15th through 17th at St. John's. And just go to hope.net and go to the talk section, and you'll be able to see what it takes, how to put together a proposal and send it on in. Because we've gotten a huge amount of people interested in giving talks. We're further along than we've ever been in that department. Again, I've said this the last couple of weeks, we do need more people to buy tickets, because this whole thing doesn't work if not enough people buy tickets. So the enthusiasm is out there. A lot of people want to come. A lot of people want to speak. A lot of people are presenting workshops and are representing their villages and all kinds of things like that. It's going to be a whole lot of fun. But for it to be as good as it can be, we need ticket-buying public to show up. And I know, travel is a hassle. I know coming from overseas is almost impossible. And for people who want to support the conference, that's why we have the virtual ticket, so that you can be a part of the conference and not have to worry about going through customs and border patrol and all that, if that is an issue for you. And you can also be a part of the talks and talk to other attendees and things like that. But super important, because we want to be able to do this every year now. And this is the test. If we're able to succeed this year, then it's pretty much a given that it will happen every year. But it has to succeed this year. And right now, kind of iffy as to whether that's going to happen.
Got one last thing about the OmniCard. Do you guys have it linked to the smartphone, or do you just use it independent of the smartphone?
I actually really enjoy the physical cards. And we went during the early introduction of them, and there were specific vending machines that had them at a discount. So I also have one for other cities with accounts and stuff like that. And sometimes it gets a little weird about a recurring payment card. That's one of my only critiques. But I do like some of the features, like I can double tap if I have a guest with me very easily. Like, I don't have to think about that as much. But it really... it's up to your personal preference. I don't want to have to always have my phone out. And I also like being able to put it inside different pockets, so you can just swipe your pocket onto a the reader when you're going. You don't even have to take it out of your pocket.
You have to be like careful though, because every credit card could also do the same thing.
You're not bashing your phone against the thing, so, right?
But it can read off your phone. It can read off your credit cards and things like that. I don't recommend anybody use their credit card directly unless it's an emergency, or their phone if you value your privacy, because that is tied directly to who you are. Whereas you can buy an Omni card and you don't even have to use. You can buy it with cash if you want to, and then it's not tied to who you are, and you just have that standalone card that you use every time you get on a bus or train.
I just want to add, this also allows you to selectively block it. I think you were kind of implying that if you are putting your phone in some kind of Faraday container or a selection of your cards, whatever is radio activated, you can mix and match how you want to have those exposed or not with greater ease, I think.
Yeah.
Have you heard any announcement from the MTA as to when they're going to eliminate the MetroCard entirely? Because I'm still using the MetroCard.
Yeah, they were supposed to do it by now. I think towards the end of the year, I think is what they're shooting for now. If not, then around that period at some point. Gila, go ahead.
Okay.
Gila, you're muted. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh. I muted you. Sorry about that. Go ahead.
Oh, that's fine. I was going to say. I've actually stopped using my OmniCard. There are not enough pieces that are giving me the information that I need, so I stopped using it and transitioned to using the prepaid benefits transit card that I get when I get paid on my phone, because after I'm not taking full credit for this, but I will say that after we pointed out some of the security and safety flaws inherent in the Omni system, right? You could look up all the trips somebody had taken if you had their Omni card number.
Not anymore. Nobody.
Not
can
anymore.
Do that. Yeah, I can't look up my own trips.
Right. I find that incredibly frustrating. I can't tell how close I am to the fare cap. And because the Omni, when you tap it, does not give you the balance,
yes,
which I think is one disadvantage of the Omni versus the MetroCard. So I quit. And I just put the prepaid benefits card on my phone, and that's what I use to tap.
Well, it's good you have options. You can do that. You can go from one system to another. It's pretty mm-hmm. versatile that way. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, the caller mentioned the MetroCard talks at Hope, and I did just want to give a shout-out to the two MetroCard talks that were done at early Hope conferences were, of course, done by our good friend Jim, who is sadly no longer with us. But, he was working as a Red Balaclava at the time. He was a part of this program for many, many years. And we all miss him a lot, but his talks are still up on YouTube on Channel 2600 in our catalog of past Hope Talks. And they're still worth checking out. I think there's probably stuff in there that you could translate to the OmniCard ecosystem, just because the MTA has not changed certain things, I think, too much.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions, caller?
No, you covered it. Look forward to seeing a talk about it at some point, and I guess I got to get myself an OmniCard one of these days. Before,
you will be,
rather than later.
You'll be assimilated into the Omni system, yes.
All right, thank you. Have a great night.
Thanks, take care. And again, more info on Hope. Hope.net is the website, and you should be able to find everything you need to know. Gila.
Quick greetings to the 46 or 47 people who are hanging live with us right now in the chat. And Emmanuel, I have a question for you from It's Chat Relay. Any update on the 2600 voice BBS project?
Oh, Lord. Well, here's the thing. There are so many projects. So many projects. Why are you pointing and laughing, Kyle?
I'm pointing and laughing because you're behind on that.
I'm behind
on
everything.
You've been talking about it. You've reminded yourself like several times recently, like, we got to get that up. We got to do that.
You know, if I didn't have to worry about this conference so much and didn't have to also juggle a magazine and radio and all the other things, then I could do this. I like doing things like that. I really do. It's a joy to organize all these voices from the past and memories and things like that.
Your concern is to do it the right way.
I want to do it the right way. Yeah,
curated. We want to respect the innocent and
oh, there's no innocent.
And
don't fool yourself. Nobody was innocent.
And, yeah, yeah, it was, all that.
It was the 1990s. It was a rough time. But, you know, we have it all, and we just have to organize it. As you can see from our site, we're not big on design, but we are big on archiving and organization and just capturing everything. So you can be assured when we are given a spare moment we can do things, we will certainly have that done, and haven't forgotten about it. Just add it to the list. Any other questions? Any other concerns? No? Okay. Oh, go ahead.
That's all we got for now.
All right. We have a phone call?
Yes.
All right. Here is our phone call.
Yes.
Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Yes, Emmanuel.
Rebel, you're coming through loud and clear. Kyle, what did you do wrong? You you fixed the hum. It's gone, and I hear Rebel, and I get nothing else.
Oh, I didn't see that. Yeah, you know what? The thing I used to identify it's in a different spot.
Uh huh. Rebel, how are you?
Look, it is him.
What's on your mind?
Okay, I just like to ask some phone things.
Well, that's a twist.
In the old days, and maybe even today, if you have call forwarding, and you a question for the old times of electronic and digital switches. If you have call forwarding, you forward your calls to another number, like you forward this number, 802-321-HACK or whatever, to the 2600 or the radio station, whatever. Can you still make outgoing phone calls?
It depends on how you have it set up. You know, if you have access to that actual line, or if it forwards to a different line, then you can make phone calls either on the line that matches that number or on whatever line it forwards to. It's different for every setup.
Like, if you have a home phone and your number was 751-2600, that's your home phone, regular home phone, and you have call forwarding, you forward your number to whatever, the radio station, whatever. And if I called your 751-2600, it would go to the radio station. But can you still be at your home and make phone calls?
Yes, the phone line will still work even if it's forwarding. In fact, it'll continue to forward while you're on the phone. That's how call forwarding works.
Oh, so you'll be able to make phone calls while you're forwarding.
Yeah, the forwarding will work. The forwarding is done inside the central office. You program it from your instrument, from your phone, but you can use it. You can use your phone, and the call forwarding will continue to work.
And people will call you, and then it'll be forwarded to wherever you sent it.
Exactly.
Okay. Now, when I was at some residential, I was visiting some family members, and they have, Verizon local phone company, they have a regular wired line phone, and I was testing some things out. I dialed 0 and got a Verizon operator and dialed, 411 and got information from Verizon. But then I dialed 100 and got a recording saying your call cannot be completed. Then I figured I'd dial 10288 or 101-0288, and still the call cannot be completed. Why is that? I mean, I thought you were able to, select the long-distance company.
Well, it depends how the long-distance company has decided to deal with carrier access codes, if they still support that. So you're dialing, did you dial 1010288, those was AT&T?
Yeah, for AT&T.
Okay, did you try other carrier access codes, like 1010333, perhaps?
No, I did not try that, and nor did I try maybe 611 to see if that goes through.
I mean, I honestly don't know anybody who uses carrier access codes to make long-distance calls. So it's possible that very few people make use of this service, and I would bet that very few long-distance companies actually are using that anymore as well. But you can certainly scan around and see. You know, the dialing sequence still will work.
And you could also dial, which I forgot to do, 700-555-4141?
0700-555-4141, I believe, would tell you your long distance company, if I remember correctly.
Now, I called AT&T and that said that, let's say I wanted to have a business and I wanted a toll-free number. You have to pay for toll-free. Like, if you have a toll-free number, the person has to pay a monthly fee plus, 5 cents or 10 cents per minute when somebody calls their 800 number.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and more if they call from a payphone, if they can find one.
Right. And so this 800 number, the toll-free number that you have for
that we have no connection with. That's a listener donation.
Oh, so they're paying for it just for them. It
depends what kind of service they have, you know. Maybe they run a phone company, or maybe they have a good deal where they get a certain number of minutes, or maybe it's completely unlimited, or who knows?
Could be their kid's paper route.
Yeah, you don't know.
Hmm. We should have a fundraiser for this radio for Rothelic Overtime. You know, like, raise money and...
We don't need money for overtime. What do we need money for? Overtime is the one thing that basically sustains itself, because there's no real expense.
We'll definitely ask, though, when we come down to that part of the barrel. But as we said last week, we don't really want to... conform to those conventions, have ads interrupting things, and have you do challenges for us. It's not part of the ambiance, but definitely talking about phone systems, and you ask great questions on these types of issues that I think a lot of people can identify with when they're staring the telephone man or woman in the face, looking into their eyes.
What in God's name are you going on about? The telephone man or woman in the face?
Yeah.
Wow. I'm not just picturing.
Knocking at your door.
Uh-huh.
And you're trying to solve a problem.
Any other questions, Rebel?
Let's see. So, I guess that's...
Hang on. I think Gila has a question for you. Go ahead.
I do. So, Rebel, I hear I'm at a graduation and I'm not here tonight. What the fuck?
Wait, what?
Rebel hopped in the chat and said Gila has gone to a graduation and she will not be with us this evening.
Wait, but then who are you?
Yeah, who are you?
Crazily enough, I'm not 100% sure now.
Wow, Rebel, what do you know about this?
Wait, I couldn't hear Gila.
Why not?
Because I'm not here.
Well, okay. Now it makes sense.
Oh, you're supposed to be at some graduation.
Right. What are you? What?
Why aren't you at the graduation, Gila? You're letting people down.
I know. It's terrible. I do wonder if it's graduation,
by the way.
Poor little Brittany is waiting for
not
you.
Not attending right now. Rebel, what do you know that I don't?
Yeah, where do you get your information, Rebel?
Online.
Oh, that should answer everybody's
question. Speaking of online. I was listening to some, like,
You know, Rebel, if that's an attempt to change the topic, it's a very poor one, because we still want to know why you're spreading misinformation, possibly disinformation, about Gila.
I am curious.
I thought she was going to a graduation.
And where did you hear this?
I don't know. I thought I heard it in the chat.
Can we pull the chat, please?
Yeah, okay. So I opened the chat by saying... Good evening to one and all. That was the first thing in the chat this evening. I said, good evening to one and all. Which apparently meant, I'm not actually here. I went to a graduation.
Well, that's what somebody giving a graduation speech would start with. So maybe that's what confused him.
I can see that as an explanation.
Good evening. Yeah, totally. That's a good opening. Rebel, we tire of this. One more question, then we have to move on.
Okay. When you take pictures at private places, at your home or office or work or something, do not use the location feature on your phone, because I hear that, you know, if you post it online to Facebook or some other platforms, some people who may not be able to know what they're doing can get the metadata from the picture. In other words, they can not only get the picture of, you know, like when it was taken, but maybe like the location, what kind of camera was used, what kind of phone was used.
Well, okay, this is good reporting there, Rebel. Can you tell us how to turn that off?
I don't know how, but I heard
a
video.
Okay, then sit back and listen, and we'll tell you how. And did you want to say it, Kyle, or do you want someone else to?
Well, I know there's a couple different things here that I think are worth talking about. Specifically, that is true. Turning location off on your device is one step, one layer of protecting... where a photo might be coming from, as far as what can be taken from the file itself. Some of the platforms also obscure this, and they do that as a courtesy. But I would check. I would run a test with yourself somehow. Take a picture of something blank and try to upload it, but don't make it a public post. And then download it. Maybe things like that. Try to run a test of some kind to be sure. that it is working, or otherwise verify that that is actually something one or the other platforms are doing. And when it comes to AI, I think what I was talking about this, and I was thinking about this in general, the content of a file, even if that was stripped, there are other programs you can use to remove the metadata in a general computing environment, like on a regular computer. Once you have just an image that, say, was originally never encoded with a location because you turned your location off and so forth, did everything you could, it could look at the environment, and there's ever better tools to use to figure out where and at what time a picture was taken. In either case, visually, if it was taken in a distinct location, or if there is information encoded in the file itself, when you're putting it into the type of tool like an AI chatbot, some kind of large language model, that machine learning could repurpose that or use it or otherwise make it available to others that use it, or even yourself if it's personalized for you. You have to know and be aware of how that model might take that information into consideration for you and others, and or the people behind it. And I think that warning was very clear when a lot of these services were starting, but they don't pop up regularly to remind you of that.
So are you saying that even if you turn this off on your phone, on your camera, there are services now or skills that are being developed that can identify, just based on how a picture looks, where it was taken, maybe even when it was taken, and that soon it might not even be up to us anymore?
Yeah, I'm saying both machine tools that are automated, and also just people that are curious or do this for fun, which it is a thing, they can use some of their own tools, their own favorite thing to do, to try to put it together as a challenge or a puzzle. So those are all factors in the types of imagery that you're sharing publicly.
There was a website, I played with this once, where it would just show you a random image and you had to try and figure out where that was just based on the picture. I was kind of good at it. I would usually get the right continent, but it is a challenge. And there are little subtle clues, like the kind of earth, the kind of trees, the kind of road markings, things like that. So it's definitely a skill, but apparently with large language models, it'll be able to be done in a fraction of a second and take all the fun out of it.
Well, absolutely. And there are, just be very deliberate about your understanding of where and how you're sharing information and with what.
Mm-hmm.
And how it...
Well, it might not be up to you anymore, though.
It is very... I mean, these warnings are becoming harder and harder to be the sort of front lines, or the last bulwark, or whatever you, however you want to describe it. It is getting harder and harder because there's so much ability out there.
Go ahead, Alex.
Well, you know, much like I was during the radio show, I'm first and foremost here. I'm just delighted to learn about some of your wholesome online activities, Emmanuel, as well. Sounds like you're really enjoying yourself there with these online games and things. And so, you know, very, very, very glad
it's
you're
It's hardly a
busy.
Game. It's a picture. And do you know where this is? Guess, yes or no. That's not much of a game.
But to go back to the issue at hand, just one minor correction as to what Rebel had said here. What he's really talking about, this data that's associated with, you know, where you took a photo and the type of camera you're using, the latitude and longitude, that type of thing, is called EXIF data, or exchangeable image file format data. That is information about how a picture is taken and where a picture is taken, that's stored with the picture itself. So it's stored with a JPEG or a GIF or GIF, I guess, you know, something like that. But if, let's say, Rebel posted a picture of himself somewhere with all of this EXIF data, and he uploaded it to Facebook. Facebook then processes that image and displays it to me, I'm not going to be able to download that image and extract the EXIF data and extract that information, because that information is stored within the original file itself, not the file that social media is then going to display to the rest of the world. So you'd be sharing that information with a social media platform and whoever has the original of that particular file. But as Kyle said, there would be other, other ways to figure out where you were, even if you had this turned off. But it is kind of fun to play around with the extraction of EXIF data from any type of file as well, whether it's a PDF or some kind of image file. And a really great tool to do that from the command line is something called EXIF tool. And it's just a binary that you can download and very, very easily extract metadata from basically almost any file. It's really kind of interesting to see what is stored along with Word files as opposed to PDFs, and it's kind of neat.
I hope that answers your question, Rebel, because it's the last question that you have for tonight.
But what if I put up a picture of like the 1980s or the 1990s? Then what? They can't find out where it is.
It can tell by the type of film. For one thing, I'll tell you when I've used artificial intelligence to analyze pictures, it can basically tell the era based on clothing, based on cars, based on, like I said, the type of film that's used.
Yeah, a lot of that image recognition and other tools are able to see things that are very small that you might not get at a first glance, or you might not understand in context. You're talking, I know you've done this a couple times, but there was an antique book that had some old pictures in it that we were, we scanned, and then
it was,
I think you ran some
a
through.
I'll tell people this. It was a first edition of The Jungle.
Correct.
By either Sinclair Lewis or Upton Sinclair.
Upton Sinclair.
I always mix them up. Inside that book were about a dozen large negatives, bigger than I've ever seen negatives.
4x5, large format.
Yeah, it was bizarre. It took us a couple of years to figure out how to scan those and make them into something that we could actually see as a picture. It also wasn't very high priority, but I figure it probably was something that dated back to when that book came out. And sure enough, when we looked at the people, they were dressed in like turn of the century attire. They were at some kind of place in the country. And we processed it through one of the large language models, and it gave some good theories. It's a time period and things like that, the part of the country, etc. But we're now close to figuring out who those people were. I don't think it was Upton Sinclair, though.
But you think about the time it takes to do that; it can become a lead to use other technologies and combine the effect of them. This is what a lot of intelligence agencies do. But think, once you have digital copies of the individual's faces, then you could start introducing stuff like facial recognition. And that's becoming, ever more affordable and accessible. So the combination of tools like that and other things with geolocation are really evolving in fast and interesting ways. So you're very, very right to ask about this, because this is a consideration when people are having phones confiscated, when they travel or things like that. If you have original copies of things, that's bits of information that would be potentially saved and could jeopardize some of your privacy. So it's definitely an important conversation.
Rob, I'm going to get to you in a second. I just want to take this moment to say goodbye to Rebel. Thank you for your questions. We're going to open the phone line for somebody else, and we'll talk to you in a future show. All right, I guess no comment from him. I hope he's not miffed, but whatever. And also, folks, I should point out that we're doing a call-in show next week on WBAI, so there won't be an overtime next week. And also, if you called this show this week, please don't call next week to give someone else a chance. Maybe somebody doesn't even listen to overtime. That would be nice. Go ahead, Rob.
Just a little extra info about EXIF data. Rebel asked, what about if you're using old photos from the 80s and whatnot? If you're scanning in old photos from film or paper, the EXIF data will then very likely contain information on the scanner you used, when you scanned it, possibly the username that you're registered on your software, your computer, or whatnot. So there is other data that can identify you in a scanned image, so just be on the lookout for such things.
You can't hide. And by the way, let me give out the phone number, 802-321-4225. The phone lines are now open. Go ahead, Gila.
I do want to push in a question. Also, first of all, I want to thank the chat. There was a lively discussion about whether I am, in fact, an AI. And and then I... Okay, so the question we received, and I'm reading this as we received it, what's your thoughts on XMR and the government trying to censor it?
I think that's
the question.
I think that's talking about Monero, XMR, which is a cryptocurrency that's known to be used in a lot of illicit transactions because it's a closed ledger type of system on the blockchain and defies trackability. I don't know a lot about what's going on with that. I think that it, or rather, if the government is trying to crack down on it, it's really doing it through like KYC or AML type of perspective, through those types of compliance requirements for know your customer and anti-money laundering regulations. So I think what they're trying to do is just basically make it unavailable in the United States by not having it be traded at all on major exchanges that Americans Americans can interact. So I think that's what they're trying to do, is just try to kind of crush it into oblivion. But also my understanding is I think there was a pretty recent price spike in it because of I actually don't remember what caused it, but I think there was some really significant movement in it. So that could be another angle by which they try to regulate it as well, that it could be too volatile for people to be holding or something. So, yeah, weird, but I wish I knew more about it, but great question.
All right. 802-321-4225 is our phone number. I believe the phone lines are open still, Kyle? Is that true?
No.
Maybe it's not true anymore. The phone is ringing. Okay, well, let's see who is online. And welcome. This is Overtime. Good evening.
Hello, this is Lou Aichu from Washington, D.C. I still hear a little bit of the hum, actually.
Interesting, because last week you couldn't hear the hum, but we heard the hum.
Oh, wait, no, never mind. It's interference from my own analog.
Okay, that's a relief to hear, because...
Yeah, our, in and out a second, but nope.
Our phone line is clean as a bell this week.
This is a temporary setup, but we're trying to do better.
Yeah. So what's on your mind this week?
Yeah, all right, so... about Exif, the newer iPhones do a pretty good job of allowing you to remove excess Exif data from photos and videos you upload. Like, there's a little button at the bottom of the screen that chooses what you can share, and that's pretty helpful, because, I mean, not all platforms have a content delivery network that will process these images. Like, if I put them, let's say I uploaded them to a file sharing service, and that would not remove the EXIF. It would keep it as is, and I'd still have the location of the photo I took it for iPhone. That's usually enabled by default. Mm-hmm. Of course, the phone you took it, the specifications of the camera, etc. So, yeah.
I just wonder if somewhere in law enforcement, they're trying to figure out a way that they can override these settings on a suspect's phone, where, you know, somebody turns it off saying, yeah, I'm safe now. My pictures won't have any metadata in them. And, Detective Sipowicz can just say, oh, you know what, we're going to override this using this particular Trump-era law that was passed that allows us to just sneak into the settings and turn it back on, and they'll never be the wiser. I'll bet somebody is trying to figure this out.
Go ahead.
One of you go ahead. Kyle, you go ahead and go ahead.
I think there are a variety of techniques where that is possible. In certain cases, I think with printers and stuff, there's been stories about steganographic techniques where you hide information.
Yes, the yellow dots.
Yeah, exactly. That came out in one of the leaks from The Intercept, I think, that got somebody in trouble. I think Reality Winner, I think her case.
Uh-huh.
Something like that.
I remember
could
that
be at, yeah, some of that stuff could be at play in any given situation. This is where that's a different level of, I guess... expertise as far as extracting information, finding out if that is indeed something that is incorporated into the design of the phone's camera or any kind of camera. But that I think would require a little bit more as far as filtering, let's say, like what is becoming more popular with some of the AI and machine learning models is to poison photos so that they cannot be easily understood. But in that case, I mean, that would need like a little bit more academic research and some understanding of where that's been applied. But you got to imagine stuff like that could be possible. But it's why it's, I think, good to get in healthy habits as far as the removal of EXIF data as just a first layer of obscuring things that you want to keep that information sort of away from being made public in some way. So if you have a particular photo that needs to get out, but you don't want it to be as easily traced, you might look into some mix of different tools to reprocess that image. And just as simple as like with the case of using a scanner for old photos, like Rebel was talking about in the last call, you could just resave them without any of that data. So it wouldn't even say anything about your scanner. You'd just be talking about a file that was created at a certain point, and maybe you could even change that date. You know, all kinds of techniques, and depending on how serious a threat or what you're concerned about, you'd have to employ all of them or some combination, and you'd have to rigorously go ahead and look for puzzles and patterns like that if it's something that's being encoded visually and so on and so forth. So you can read a lot more about all of those kinds of techniques and where they've been employed beyond just the few minutes we have here.
Right. That reminds me of when a couple of years ago when people figured out how to de-censor pictures and videos that were censored with a pixelate filter. That's pretty interesting because that should be a destructive, an operation that cannot be undone, but turns out it is using math. I think the only safe way to censor graphics is just to put a big black box all over it, and it's crude.
Yeah.
And TV definitely won't like it, but I mean, that's the gold standard. And the easiest way to do it, less computationally intensive than pixelation or Gaussian blur. Has anybody figured out how to unblur Gaussian blurred images?
Anyone working on that?
I honestly don't know off the top of my head, but absolutely. Stuff that is created mathematically, like effects like blur or the pixelate effect, you would want to maybe reduce that pixelate down to very few numbers. Not something that is easily discernible. Either, you know, get it down to like three colors or something. The blurs, I think, are also easier. The swirls, those don't work. But yeah, like creating a opaque box or layer, actually removing the content from an image, then putting a box to fill that, then making sure you flatten it. You know, there are lots and lots of instructions on how to correctly redact things, and this has actually come out in public filings and governmental documents that haven't been properly prepared. So it's a wide field of interest.
Rob might have an answer. Go ahead.
Yeah, there are very interesting things that you can do with blurred and pixelated images to, you know, math works both ways generally, and if you do something with math, you can find math that can help take it back in the other direction. It won't always be perfect. In fact, it will very rarely be perfect, but you'll have something like the original. I remember cases, this is going way back, like in the 90s, early 2000s maybe, where there were photos going around of like sexual abuse material, and you know, the guilty parties were posting these online, but with their faces blurred or pixelated or whatever, and people were able to undo the blurs to get enough of a look at what the person looked like that they could be caught. Now, when you throw things like generative AI into it, the keyword is generative, where that's a computer generating stuff that it thinks might be there, and you can't trust that as evidence of anything, because that is like new information being added to the image that may or may not be based on anything that is trustworthy. So generative AI is something that's being used to create really unreliable looks at what might be under the blur, but pure math can take you a lot of the way there in a surprising amount of cases.
Does that answer your questions, caller? Caller, are you still there?
Right.
Okay, does that answer your questions?
Oh, yes. You just cut. Yes, there is just a bit of a problem with my connection for a moment. But yeah, it seems like magic. You shouldn't be able to undo these things that seem undoable, but they actually are.
Mm-hmm.
On another note, I mean, I'm pretty skeptical of the AI models that are supposedly are able to predict, you know, what how do I phrase it? What where your image was taken? Yes,
mm-hmm.
I have a lot of pictures on a I use a pretty old digital camera. It's maybe 10 years old, and it doesn't have a GPS. And I use a lot to take photos of my equipment because I do solder and stuff, and I need to take photos for reference. If it's just a picture, like in, of, you know, my house, you know, my shed where I have all my old computer stuff, is that really something, is it really possible to tell where that was taken if there's no access, no GPS or anything? I don't think so. It's a different story, however, if you're taking a picture of your house. You know, a lot of people out there are pretty skilled, actually, at deciphering an address just from a picture of the house, finding out where it is.
Yeah, a lot of real estate is done with like 3D and 360 degree and drone photography and 3D walkthroughs of the internal spaces. So however you acquired your house, if it's been on the market before, that inside may be well understood, and it may even be in like a CAD or BIM, you know, 3D space in some engine somewhere. There's a lot more possibility now because there's just the ability to encode our spaces outside and in digital form and catalog and organize it has just grown so exponentially. It's so affordable. So yeah, you may have a particular space or a particular part of a building that you're in that hasn't been seen anywhere ever in a digital way, but the further out into common spaces you get and the more published that space has ever been, it may get harder and harder.
It's only going to get more and more sophisticated. Go ahead, Rob.
An interesting case happened some years ago with a pop star in an Asian country. I don't remember if it was Korea or Japan or somewhere, but it was a famous pop star with a lot of, say, obsessive fans. And one of them took a photo that she had posted to social media, zoomed in on the reflection in her glasses, which had a view out her window, matched that up with basically manually going through the area where she lived on Google Street View, and using that to figure out where exactly this celebrity lived. And, you know, that's one person out there who flipped their wig and decided to be that obsessive about it. But it is an example of what you can do with a lot of effort. And you don't even need any kind of AI or computers to help you with that.
Now, that is a stalker. That is mm-hmm. a proper stalker. Yeah. Any final words, caller? We gotta move on.
Right. About hope. I won't be making it to the next Hope conference. You know, the stars have not and moons have not aligned. Hopefully, the one after this one.
But okay.
I actually. What?
I said okay.
Yes, right. Which one? The last one. Yes, I actually broadcast it over analog TV. It was pretty fun.
Oh, wow.
Coming up with the setup for it.
Uh-huh.
Interesting as well.
I think I heard about that.
You remember that?
Yeah. Cool. Well, you know, you can still participate remotely as well. We have virtual tickets, and the whole thing will be online. So hopefully we just get enough people to make the thing worthwhile. So that's what we're working for right now.
Yes, of course. I like to give a shout. I like to talk a bit about the equipment I use because it's pretty remarkable how cheap some of that stuff is. Well, first of all, my choice to broadcast it over analog TV. I probably won't do that again, mainly because of the complications of finding equipment that can still operate in those bands. A lot of digital TV moved over to UHF.
Right.
And because, of course, with the digital system, it's called ATSC. Tell it to display whatever number you want, and that doesn't reflect the actual frequency that it's been transmitted on.
Right. Yeah, the virtual channels and the actual channels. I learned a lot about this, actually, because we've been experimenting with over-the-air digital signals, and it turns out what you say is right. A lot of stations did move to UHF because, unlike with analog TV, VHF is now at a disadvantage, and you get less coverage than with UHF. So the old UHF channels, those frequencies have a big advantage. But it's, you know, I have to say, it is so disappointing because the signal strength that does not match what used to be the case with analog, where you could get something from a distance. Here, you pretty much have to point directly at the place you want to receive a signal from and hope that something's there and give up all the other directions that a signal could be coming from. I don't really think we gained very much from that transition.
Yes, of course. It's a signal that is digital in nature. You either get it or you don't. There's no in-between.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like the area code plan. You know, they don't mean anything anymore.
Right.
So it is with digital TV. Some of them, if you have an option to show the real frequency on some TVs, which is pretty useful. But, I mean, some people even break out frequency scanners just to see exactly where these channels are, and that's important for pirate analog TV because you want to make sure your signal, of course, isn't interfering with anybody else. But I mean, like I said, I won't be doing that again for hope because I don't know anybody here in my area is tuned to analog TV. If I do it again, I'll probably do just a pirate FM because think about it. A lot of people here still have cars that would have an FM tuner built in.
Of course, yeah. But you know, you can find people who have digital TV just by walking through your neighborhood and looking for TV antennas.
Yes, right.
Outdoor antennas.
And there's a question of are they used or are they not anymore? You know, some people get cable and those antennas are no longer used.
True, right? But digital antennas look a little different, and if they have those, that means they at least tried after the transition.
Well, you can use the regular VHF, UHF. Whatever antennas you use for analog, they'll still work for digital ATSC.
Okay.
Yeah, right. There's not really that big of a difference. It is, like I said, it's more people with their cars tuned to FM tuners. It's
definitely
much more.
Yes.
The whole thing about pirate broadcasting, you want people to actually tune in.
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to tune? I mean, this. Yeah.
And you know, something else I really want to recommend to people is SDF radio, which, Kyle, maybe you could say a couple words about. But basically, you know, you're able
to SDR.
I'm sorry, SDR. I got that mixed up. SDR radio, because basically, and you don't have to say radio again. SDR, which basically allows you to listen to a frequency of your choice in a different part of the world, and you can change the dial, and anybody can do this at the same time. It's really incredible. There's one. I don't have the URL in front of me, but there's one service in the Netherlands.
SDR.org, that might be it.
No, actually, it's a .edu address, I think, and
one of the first ones listed for the web SDR search.
It's incredible because you can find pirate stations that way, pirate stations on shortwave that are broadcasting all over the world. You can also find government stations. You can find stations in the United States. You can find data transmissions. And not only that, there are chats for what you can listen to on that service and explanations about every broadcaster that they have information for. So there are many ways to listen and view from transmissions.
But I'd encourage you to keep playing around with and messing around with digital TV as well.
Yes.
idea of broadcasting it over the analog channels. Thank you. For anybody out there in Washington, D.C., like me, there's also ShmooCon, which I don't think has been mentioned very much on this show.
I don't think they're having that anymore. Wasn't this year the last one?
Really?
That's what I heard.
Because, well, I'm not sure. I would expect it to continue, but the last ShmooCon was this January, and I actually forgot about it. I didn't follow up on that, but I think the previous one I was reminded about because I actually bumped into someone in the grocery store who was sporting Shmoo merch, and that was a pretty magical experience to be meeting one of my own. You wouldn't expect that, would you?
Yeah, I'm looking at the Wikipedia page, and ShmooCon was an American hacker convention, so I'm sad. I never got to go to it. But it just goes to show you got to treasure these things while they're around.
Yeah, I would have loved to be there.
All right, thank you so much for your call.
All right, goodbye.
All right, take care. All right, you like slamming that receiver down, don't you, Kyle?
I'll do it again.
That's a regular Bell a phone you got there. You want to tell us what kind of phone that is? I know our last caller would appreciate what kind of phone this is. It's a Western Electric, right?
It is. It's a 2500 DMGC.
Wow.
I think. Something like that.
I'm pretty sure he said he was calling from a 2500 a week or two ago. So
One's got some extra features it's not really using, but...
Uh-huh.
Like, it's... I forgot what the R key does.
Probably redial.
Maybe, yeah.
What else could it be? It's a button to the left of the star that says R.
I'm not going to press it.
No, don't. Well, we didn't dial anything, so.
But this is part of another system. It's kind of a miracle that works at all.
It's a miracle anything works around here. We only have a couple minutes left, so if someone's going to call in, they have to do it quickly, and it has to be a quick call. 802-321-4225, and within 2 minutes, we will stop talking. And there's a phone call. Let's take this one, and good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead. Speak up, please. Is anyone there? No. I guess they chickened out at the last second. All right. A minute and a half more. 802-321-4225. Did anyone in Signal Land have any comments?
I did make it to ShmooCon once. I never successfully got a ShmooCon ticket, but I was given one once, and it was definitely an interesting experience. Total singular vibe to ShmooCon. That isn't quite like any of the other conferences.
Yeah, all the conferences are different. That's one thing for sure. ShmooCon was unique. Hope is unique. DEF CON is unique. They're all different. Okay, let's take this phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Hello. How is everybody?
We're pretty much okay, I think, for the most part. Yeah, I think we're all right. How are you?
Good. So I have been doing a lot of promo for WBAI recently because they actually did a benefit concert on May 3rd. And now there's another advertising opportunity that's kind of a no-brainer. The dance parade is Saturday, and it has 100,000 people, almost 100,000 people along the route. And there's this really funny, fun float called the House Coalition Float. And so I reached out to the general manager and haven't heard back from him yet. His email is gm@wbi.org. I'm encouraging him to advertise on the side of the float and then have people flyering on the side, you know, and on it. And it costs $325 for WBI to advertise to the outside, because more listeners equals more money for the station. Mm-hmm. So I'm encouraging everybody to please email him, because so far I'm the only person that's reached out to him, and it's very easy to ignore someone when you're the only one asking them for something. So it would be a great symbiotic thing, because they don't have a lot of sponsors right now. And in Rainbow Gathering Land, we celebrate Interdependence Day, because we realize that we really do all need each other.
Very true. So, can you tell us more about this parade? Is there a link to learn more about that?
Yeah, so I sent him actually, it's all events or something. I don't have the actual link, but it's totally like the dance parade that's been around for 18 years. And they're actually like victorious people, right? So they outlawed the cabaret law. So I now only surround myself with victorious people.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Well, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
So, well, yeah, it's a dance parade. And if anybody wants to look up, you know, like Riding on a Float or House Coalition, the thing will come up, like the sponsorship page. And there's like all these different levels. And the one that's the best is the Boogie Down sponsor one. And you get like three people to ride on the float and your stuff, all, you know, your banners on the side. And they're encouraging. I got in touch with the parade organizer and the float person, and they both were like, bring two banners. Yes, we love WBAI. So,
and two more things. When is the parade, and what route does the parade generally take?
So it's Saturday, and I did reach out to the general manager starting Friday. So we really do need people to be like, dude, no-brainer. $325, totally reasonable for 100, almost. So, and it starts like 18th Street and like Broadway-ish, and goes down and then definitely makes a left onto 8th Street, aka St. Mark's Place, which is where the, you know, like where that cube is that you can push. It's really fun.
Astor Place, yes. Right.
Yeah, that's where the grandstand's going to be. And Jeannie Hopper, our old ex-house music.
Yeah, yeah. I used to listen to her all the time.
Dude, she is going to be the MC there. And so you get to like hear about each like dancer as they go by. 10,000 dancers. So you can imagine how many more parade watchers, right?
A lot of dancing there. Wow.
So we need the WBAI street team like in effect.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
Out
totally.
There. That's a great idea. That's so smart.
Yes.
Thanks. And they made flyers and they're up on the WBAI website already, but they're from the, they're like old. So Spanish side needs to be on the other one. So if you look on WBAI's marketing and advertising page, you'll see Pete Seeger tribute concert, because unfortunately they weren't able to like correctly label it like WBAI benefit concert. And so if you click on it, the second page, because they're double-sided, like half-size flyers, dig? So unless you click on it, you don't even see the second size. Okay. So that's what would be handed out. It would be like English on one side, Spanish on the other, instead of the other side being the advertisement for the benefit concert, because that passed.
All right. Well, thanks so much for your support and for the great ideas, and have a blast this weekend.
We will. Thank you.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
That's a good note to end on, I think. People trying to help, come up with ideas and support the place we all know and love.
Each one is a step. It's a step along the way, supporting the station, supporting community, supporting one another. And we absolutely got to consider getting out there, being visible, having something to say alongside that presence. So that's a great idea. It's a good thing for all of us to be thinking about in many regards.
And if you want to support the station in other ways, buddy.wbai.org is the website that gives you all kinds of options, including one of our favorites, making a small monthly payment each month that adds up over the year and makes us all that much more solid as far as being able to survive from month to month.
Absolutely. And if you like phone calls, you can call our pledge phone number, which is 1-833-WBAI-NYC, which translates to 833-922-4692 for those of you who like numerals. And there you can become a BAI buddy. You could make a one-time donation. Just let him know that you're calling on behalf of Off the Hook.
All right, that's going to do it for us here tonight. I want to thank everybody for listening. You've been listening to Off the Hook Overtime. Write to us, oth@2600.com. And again, next week, we will be doing a call-in show on WBAI from 7 to 8. No overtime next week. And we'll see you back here on YouTube in 2 weeks, 8 o'clock on channel 2600. Until then, please spread the word of hope, hope.net. Get some more attendees coming. And if you have an idea for a talk or a panel, you still have time to put that together and email that in. All the information is up at hope.net. All right. Have a good night, everybody.